Okay, Anna Lowe is a woman in cinema, television, theatre. After 30 years of successful filmmaking in a country... I should say this is not in the book, so I'm not spoiling the book for you. It's separate, but there is a chapter on Almodovar in the book. After 30 years of successful filmmaking in a country whose cinema industry seems always to be in crisis, a country in crisis at the moment, and 18 feature films that have won immense critical and audience approval, Pedro Almodovar would seem to be in a class of his own. On the UK release of The Skin I Live In, which was last year, the reverent interviewer of One National Daily could write, quote, "No major nation in the world has one director who enjoys such dominance over his native industry," end quote. Some Spaniards would beg to differ. Indeed, the same film was attacked by the lead critic of El País, which is the main newspaper in Spain, as hollow, an attempted tragedy which inadvertently provokes only laughter. Almodóvar's auteurist prestige, and hence his canonicity within an assumed Spanish film tradition, thus remains unstable. And it remains the case that although widely seen as the main representative of Spanish cinema outside Spain, Almodóvar is still the source of some embarrassment in his own country. So there's a kind of tension between the national and the transnational, and that's one of the three themes I'm going to treat in this brief discussion of Almodóvar cinema. Before I turn to the question of intermedia, notably the recent Broadway production of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I had the great pleasure of seeing. So I'm going to concentrate on women, nervous, defiant, and musical. But the other themes will be the breach of the barrier between art and commerce effected by Almodóvar's reconciliation of critical and popular success, because these are still films with mass audiences in the millions, even as they win Oscars. And the vexed question of postmodernism, which I argue should be taken back to its philosophical roots. So there are a little bit of theory there. So these themes are going to be illustrated with reference to three representative features. I wonder how many of you have seen these films? What Have I Done to Deserve This, 1984, is widely thought to mark the end of his early experimental period. All About My Mother, 1999, which Emma has... I should say, thank you, Emma. Sorry, I have it written down here. It says, thank you, Professor Wilson, and I didn't say it. The editor of the series. So, Emma has written a wonderful chapter in one of her books on this film. Cinema's Missing Children is the name of the book. So this film, All About My Mother, was heralded as evidence of a newly mature style. And The Skin I Live In, the last film, yet darker and more self-referential than any of its predecessors in the creator's late period. It's wonderful there is such a thing as a late period in Almodóvar, because most directors have maybe 10 years where they haven't made good films, and he's had these 30 years, three decades. So technique is central to Almodóvar's artistic signature or commercial trademark, and so I'm going to talk about sequences from each film, but just show you still images from them. And if I have a time at the end, I'll show a clip from the Broadway version of one of the films, which again is pretty much unique. Do you know any European film which is made into a Broadway musical? Well, actually, Nine, which was Fellini, Nine and a Half, was made into a Broadway musical, so there are precedents. Now, to begin with the last theme, postmoderno, postmodern has been an adjective loosely and often pejoratively ascribed to Almodóvar from the start of his career. But if we return to the scholarly origins of the term in the 1980s, we find a more precise definition, which is not without interest for Almodóvar's practice of cinema. So I remember in about 84, I heard Jean-François Lyotard speak in London on postmodernism. So as is well known, philosopher Jean-François Lyotard defined postmodern condition as one of incredulity towards meta-narratives, especially those which were once thought to explain the totality of political or psychic structures. For Lyotard, the formal trope of this condition is incommensurability. This is a kind of difference so radical that the diverse elements it juxtaposes cannot be compared or contrasted. So this, I think, is a model we can use for Almodóvar's film practice. So if we look at What Have I Done to Deserve This, this is the original Spanish poster. This film initially at least seems to come closest to being both a socio-political critique, a denunciation of living conditions of the urban poor on the fringes of Madrid, and this location still exists. If you take a taxi from the airport, you're likely to go past it. and a case study in psychoanalysis, an investigation of the near breakdown of depressed housewife Gloria, so movingly played by Carmen Maura, exiled to a monstrous housing project on the edge of the M30 Beltway, excuse my American English, Ring Road, I think we would take here, and brutalized by her sexually and financially selfish taxi driver husband, Gloria would appear to embody the perfect victim of class and gender exploitation. But Almodóvar juxtaposes this meta-narrative dimension of political and psychic critique with radically heterogeneous or maybe incommensurable elements that resist totalization. We see this in three sequences I'm going to talk about. Thus, when Gloria cleans or shops, Almodóvar favors a jarring and unusual technique. He shoots his character from inside ovens, washing machines, and here shop windows. Subjects are thus shown from the point of view of objects, an anomalous and disconcerting perspective. Likewise, when Gloria and her husband make brief and unsatisfactory love, the sequence is set to a popular song on a prostitute, ironically comparing the positions of housewife and streetwalker. But this potentially political commentary is undercut by the implausible performance of that song as shown on the family's TV set, and he uses his grandmother and child watching the show on TV. It is lip-synced by Almodóvar himself and a contemporary collaborator dressed in drag as Scarlett O'Hara. So it's a very unlikely performance, even for Spanish television, which has some crazy things. So finally, grandmother and San Tony watch, who's seen this image, watch an unlikely film in a movie theatre, Elia Kazan's Splendor in the Grass of 1961. Here the example of the Warren Beatty character's desire to stay in Kansas will inspire Almodóvar's urban misfits to move back from the city to their village, a reverse migration that contradicts some 40 years of historical Spanish population movement. So it's a film that does address then these important social issues such as failed rural integration. It remains the case, however, the use of these cinematic references transcends facile pastiche, postmodernism as it is commonly understood, but also configures a kind of radical hybridity of elements that resist integration into a whole, that is the incommensurability of philosophical postmodernism. Some 15 years later, Almodóvar's hard-won mastery of cinematic technique, he was an autodidact, he never went to film school, would seem to make such formal and ideological ruptures less self-evident. And the cultural distinction claimed by and for All About My Mother, you see the original poster here, was confirmed by its receipt of the most prestigious awards at home and abroad, including an Oscar. So there's a new austerity theme, barely troubled by comic elements, films about a mother's mourning on the death of her son, with Cecilia Roth as affecting as Mara before her, was confirmed by a certain austerity of technique. Thus, in an early sequence, the car accident in which the son dies is not directly shown. Almodóvar cuts from a suddenly shattered windshield to a blurry pan of a rainy street at night. The camera comes to rest, as you can see, at a canted angle that is not on the horizontal, and Cecilia Roth's Manuela comes wailing into frame. We realize this is the perspective of the dying youth. The unusual point of view echoes perhaps the viewpoints from objects we just saw in What Have I Done, but it's far less showy and more subtle. Later, Manuela, the main character, her arrival in Barcelona, is also filmed with economy and precision. As we see here, there's a panoramic aerial view of the city at night, gives way to a travelling shot of Manuela in a taxi, and the Sagrada Familia, the Great Church, glitters gold in its window. Sorry, I just got this a second too late, or a few frames. You cannot see the church glittering in the window, but it does. So it does. Pierre shots once more show the prostitutes working a desolate area outside the city. Before Almodóvar, as you see here, cuts to another high angle, the cars of punters circling the girls as in some kind of Dantesque inferno. That's my second Italian reference. After Fellini. In traditional style, we're here sutured, sewn into the protagonist's point of view, seeing the elements of urban spectacle, diverse, even incommensurable as they are, even from this beautiful monument to this squalid scene of prostitution, within a certain unifying subjectivity. We have this one character at the centre of all these strange and conflicting sites. A third vital sequence is the late monologue performed in a theatre by Agrado, a transsexual prostitute turned PA, who provides some limited comic relief here. Agrado's text confirms the stress on performativity, which is the greatest academic cliche on America, on Almodóvar's cinema. It's about self-fashioning through plastic surgery, and authenticity through plastic surgery. But the sequence's shooting style is defiantly plain. As you see here, Almodóvar simply sets up the camera in the stalls to observe an impeccably theatrical routine, as if, you know, like filmmakers did in 1900. Now, unlike in the case of What Have I Done, All About My Mother subtly orchestrates tones and registers that remain nonetheless radically diverse. But this newly modulated artistic technique is inseparable from the industrial conditions of its production. This is the eighth feature made by and for El Deseo, which is the independent production company headed by Pedro's brother Agustin. You can follow Agustin Almodóvar on Twitter. It's very interesting. Follow me on Twitter. If you're my 200th follower, then you get a free trip to New York. You believe that? So this film, as he was his own producer, or his faithful brother, is the money man, it benefited from complete creative freedom, which earlier features did not enjoy. Ties of family and friendship are vital here, protecting the auteur from the pressures of unsympathetic management. As I have documented myself in another book, artistic quality is part of the, it's officially, I've seen the documents, is part of the business model of the production company El Deseo, as is the commitment to diversification of media, ventures into television and theatre. So the new maturity of Almodóvar's style, so-called, is thus also a commercial strategy. It is intended to create a profitable and sustainable position for Almodóvar in a turbulent audiovisual sector. Indeed, the first line of the commercial strategy says, the business of the company is to promote and preserve the name of Pedro. Which you might think they're making movies. No. They know what their value, the value is the brand, which is called Pedro Almodóvar. With the passing of another decade, Almodóvar perhaps found the continuing pressures of celebrity more demanding. The Dark Hue, The Skin I Live In, the last film, marked his densest assemblage of self-citations. This is a great poster, Spanish poster by Juan Gatti. Unfortunately, the British poster wasn't so good. This film approaches an anthology of the director's back catalogue. The unlikely story of a plastic surgeon, Antonio Banderas, who takes revenge on the attempted rapist of his daughter. The film's kidnap bondage premise evokes Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which was 1990, also made with Banderas some 20 years earlier. A lengthy and troubling rape sequence at Kika in 1993. The hosing down of a scantily clad captive replays a famous sequence of Law of Desire, 1987. The obsessive focus on medical paraphernalia has been unnervingly prominent in each of Almodóvar's films since The Flower of My Secret in 1995. There's a kind of collaging of film fragments. Oh, it's beautifully made, but it's very diverse, the origins of these fragments. And it's confirmed by at least two mise en abîme, that's a French reference, within the film itself. The surgeon pieces together samples of skin to remake his victim, and he or she, it's a huge spoiler there, if you've seen the film, he or she, the main character, spends his or her captivity making doll-like mannequins covered by swatches of cloth. Again, another image of the filmmaking process. So like the cinematic references in What Have I Done, this emphatic quotation, even to Almodóvar himself, remains ambivalent. Is the director, like the surgeon in the film, a Frankenstein, feeding parasitically on past body parts? Or is he like Prometheus, also cited in the film, a hero who transforms human creativity through his theft? Well, such self-citation clearly serves the purposes of authorship because it makes the strongest claim for thematic and stylistic continuity. In this case, it also raises the question of the disjunction between national and transnational reception. Because as you remember at the start of the lecture, I said that critical response was very mixed in Spain itself. It was ecstatic abroad. I was at the press screening in New York, and the critics were fawning all over Almodóvar in a way that is not typical of the New York press corps. Within the film itself, Skin I Live In, it's striking how distant Almodóvar's fictional universe has grown from the social concerns of contemporary Spain, which he once addressed, however obliquely and ambivalently, in films such as What Have I Done? And if you've seen the film, you know it's set in a very moneyed milieu, surgeons and socialites secluded in country houses. Too many S's in that sentence. And the milieu remains unperturbed by the financial crisis and social unrest that has been so prominent in Spanish life during the film's lengthy production process, and indeed continues today. If you watch the news, Spain is in a terrible, terrible crisis, which is wholly invisible in Almodóvar's cinema. Now, these contradictions confirm the hermetic claustrophobia of the film's premise, and they prove untroubling to foreign viewers more willing than some locals to suspend disbelief. They could be read perhaps as continuations of that incommensurability that we saw so nakedly in What Have I Done, and more masked by consistent artistic quality in all. This is the British or American poster. It's a beautiful. The publicity shots are shot separately. It's a beautiful scene from Skin I Live In. Another one with the Jean-Paul Gaultier body suit, which has, and you can see it has raised hems like scars. So perhaps the answer to this conundrum lies in the most durable of Almodóvar's repertoire of auteurist motifs, the avenging transsexual. Now I've given away the whole plot of the film, which is pivotal in Skin I Live In, can be traced back through Bad Education and The Law of Desire to an unpublished short story of the 1970s, which is what I write about in this book. The familiar loosely postmodern trope of performance can here be qualified in a way suggested by my colleague Isolina Ballesteros before Skin's released, and she says, performativity has become, in Almodóvar's later films, a curse and a punishment, a painful burden, a tragic irony. And here he is, because in this film the theme of transgender, previously celebrated, is here, a horrible punishment inflicted on the character. If then Almodóvar is indeed in a cinematic class of his own, perilously poised between art and commerce, home and abroad, his is an institutional position that embodies unique strains and tensions, which have become increasingly visible in the text of his films. Now, one of these tensions, or maybe we could see it as an opportunity, is intermediality. That is, the intimate relation between different visual media. We could read this in two ways. First, following Henry Jenkins would be empirical. There's the convergence of media effected by producers and consumers of Woody's visual fiction. They extend their brands across multiple windows of distribution, and the Almodóvars are very, very conscious of this. They're not just art movie filmmakers. It's indeed the case that while keeping focused on the highly valued medium of feature film, others have strayed into other media, for example, producing one significant TV series called Mujeres, Women, from 2006. And licensing a number of legitimate theatre productions, for example, in London, All About My Mother played at the Old Vic. There was no production in Spain or America, as far as I know. This is what we call brand extension. It adds value to the most precious of the company resources, the name of Pedro. A second reading of intermediality would operate not at the industrial, but rather at the artistic level. And I'm just going to give a very brief theoretical account by someone called Agnes Pitho. She has an essay where she says, "The idea that cinema is unavoidably connected with other media has been a constant issue ever since the first moving picture shows were presented in a theatrical environment, and movies attempted to present narratives and to produce emotions by a combination of images and movement, music and words. End quote. Well, theoretically, she's like Lyotard on the figure role. You remember Lyotard has a book called Discours Figure? Which she says is characteristic of intermedia, the resistant trace of a space or time that is radically incommensurable, that word again, with that of discursive meaning. She concludes, the mapping of such tendencies has brought the study of cinematic intermediality far from the mere listing of media combinations towards a scholarship acknowledging cinema's non-discursive domains and more sensual modes of perception. And I hope this is a link to the second paper, because which will be about touch. So I'm glad that this is a coincidence. Now, the presence of intermedia in the text of Amador's cinema is clearly ubiquitous. He's constantly referring to other media from the very beginning. But I'd also like to say that his defiantly implausible plots direct viewers beyond the discursive realm into such sensual modes of perception as movement and music, which are often irreducible to coherent film narrative. If you try to tell the stories of the films, they don't make sense. If you watch them, they make perfect sense, because film is movement and image and sound. So, to conclude quickly, I'm going to give an impressionistic account of the recent Broadway production. Here I come from New York, bringing you something from my new hometown, of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I had the great pleasure of seeing in the lush Belasco Theatre on West 44th Street on December 1st, 2010. Now, this is a production of which Amador himself claimed significant creative input. However, the producers were prestigious New Yorkers who had just achieved critical acclaim with their revival of South Pacific at Lincoln Center. This is also from Skin and Living. This is the original poster of Women on the Verge, which was taken, I discovered recently, from Vogue in 1960. These are the credits from the original film, Women on the Verge. This is a shot of the TV show Women, where you see the small female household, as often in Amalova, and they're sitting amongst tomatoes. Why tomatoes? Because it's very Spanish, and it was a kind of facetious pun on Desperate Housewives, where you remember the women are shown in publicity shots with apples. So it's a Spanish reference. And so what I'd like to do now is just show you a series of images from that original film, and then show a very brief clip. Is that okay? So see how many... This is actually the cast of the Broadway show. So this is a series of now become classic images from the film from the 1980s. The taxi driver, the taxi, Gazpacho, the tabret, telephone. This is the main set, which is a top floor penthouse, is what they're looking for. Look at the costumes, very primary equipment, the burning bed. The burning bed again. They did this on stage. Dangerous. The guy with the blue thorn. Buttons again. And so on the left there, you see the Broadway cast, and on the right, the Amador's original cast, and you see the costume. So, I've had almost half an hour, be very brief, and impressionistic. But you can see there immediately that the mise-en-scène, the costume, the set design is based exactly on the film from 20 years ago. And this is a huge Broadway theatre. Many millions involved in this production. So who is in the audience? I look around, it's elderly women and gay men. There's nobody else. So it's not the it's kind of tourist audience. The fidelity, I'm not interested in fidelity really, but what I struck by was the fidelity of the show to the original film. Not just plot, characters, decor, costume, even cinematography. In the opening sequence, there's a high angle looking down on the character, and they reproduce this with a big mirror, so it's like you're looking down on the character. It uses digital projections of Madrid, of recognizable buildings from Madrid, rather than physical staging. The mise-en-scène of the film is retained, but theatrically exaggerated. You see the huge hat and warm weather character that they are. It is derived from the film. Now, just as to say briefly that two of those actors were very well known on Broadway because they just had success in Gypsy, and they are two of the best known in current Broadway practice. Many of the, as I say, the costumes are taken exactly from the film. So you could say then there's a cinematic model in the theatrical production. There's a swift cutting, as it were, of digital projections. But this technique is now omnipresent on Broadway. The show works hard to establish a theatrical lineage. It's dense with references to Broadway tradition in the casting, the structure, and also to past and present shows. The music is very reminiscent of In the Heights, which was a Dominican New York musical, which had just closed when this opened. The producers had just come from a successful revival of South Pacific at Lincoln Center, so they were known for their respectful approach to Broadway tradition. Yet Amadora, as a filmmaker, was also fully implicated in the production. He did a lot of publicity for it. He visited New York. And so the apparent failure of the show was thought to be Amadora's failure. As in Eliseo's venture into TV fiction, which is also considered to be a failure by the press, in industrial terms, the quest for brand extension founded on the rock of perceived quality. Quality is also part of their business model. So what is interesting about this is, on one hand, it's very cinematic, on the other hand, it's very theatrical. So there's this kind of clash or grinding of gears, or theoretically incommensurability there, which is present throughout the show. So to conclude, you remember I began this lecture by listing three concerns in Amadora cinema: the national and the transnational, art and commerce, and postmodernism, critical and philosophical. In terms of time, space, and medium, Women on the Verge, the musical, may well have seemed incoherent to audiences without specialist knowledge. This is what the New York Times said, that they couldn't follow the plot. But I ask you, how important is it to follow the plot in a Broadway musical? I had one, I'm not sure it's one word or two words, Spider-Man. Everyone knows that Spider-Man, the show makes no sense, and yet it's sold out every night. So that idea of rationality, of, I don't know, Cartesian clarity, that's, it really doesn't matter. To its credit, what this production did is it reconfirmed a fourth key concern of Amadora cinema. Like its 18 feature films, the Broadway show clearly directed viewers beyond the discursive realm of script and plot into the sensual or figural modes of perception embodied in movement and music. And it's in such a realm, difficult as it may be to articulate, the truly sympathetic approach to Amadora's film work is to be found. That's right.